Hello, my name is Katie, and this is the Truth for Your 20s podcast. And today we have another comedian. If you are a regular listener, and I hope that you are, our last episode was also a comedian. I didn't time this, but hey, the stars have aligned. This friend is actually someone I know in real life. She's a Chattanooga friend, and I know you're going to love this conversation. So here we go.
If you are in your 20s hoping there is more to life than boys and Bacardi, you are in the right place. Katie Ballmer has been a keynote speaker to over 60 colleges nationwide, encouraging 20-somethings to realize their worth, find their calling, and not date dirtbags. But seriously, Katie is an author, viral TikTok creator, wife, mom of two girls, and your adopted aunt that you never knew how bad you needed. Ready to have some real conversation tackling the hottest topics? This is the Truth for Your 20s podcast.
JJ Barrows, welcome to the podcast, friend.
Yay. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are a comedian living in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I know there's a lot more. You just wrote a book. I can't wait to unpack all of it, but I have to tell our friends how we bonded. You may or may not remember this.
Oh, I remember.
We went to a stand-up comedy show in Chattanooga. You were one of the openers. And you said something about being flat-chested, and I'm like, that's my person. She's my people. We get it.
Small girl problems.
Yes. Yes. So anyway, Just go ahead right off the gate. We're just going to, right off the gate. Power to the double
positivity.
A's.
Yeah. That's right. Positivity comes in many forms.
So we already said a little bit about you, but what did I forget? Tell me about all the things that you are up to these days.
Oh man. Well, let's see. I'm performing. I travel all over to do that. So I do a lot here in Chattanooga, but I would say I mostly travel, which is super fun. But I also just completed my second book, which is great. It's going to be released in April and I'm really excited about that. It's definitely more of a conglomeration of stories over the course of, you know, certain seasons of life. The book is called Kind of Funny: Stories by a Full-Time Comedian with Four Part-Time Jobs. But it's not just a book about comedy. I very intentionally named it Kind of Funny because some of it is kind of funny, but some of it's also kind of deep. Some of it's kind of spiritual. Some of it's kind of awkward, you know, awkward first dates and all those things. So it's totally a mix of life. It's layered, like obviously we are as people. So I'm actually super excited about it because I feel like it really, kind of encompasses a lot of parts of who I am, as opposed to just this one stage presence that people get to see online or at a show. Oh, so that's kind of the latest.
Okay. So many things I want to unpack, but I know one of the, you said four part-time jobs, which no big deal, yeah. But I know one of those is like crafting and you have an obsession with Dolly Parton. Tell me all about that.
Yeah. I love art. That's definitely one of my passions and something that I've always done even long before I got into comedy. I was doing art. I mean, if I'm honest, probably I've done art ever since I was a little kid, but I had a hard time ever calling myself an artist because, you know, at a certain point when you grow up and you realize, oh, you know, people do this as a job and they sell these and I don't do that. So I'm not a professional. I just play around. But, you know, in doing my own work and therapy and all those things, I realized, you know, even if I never sell a painting, it doesn't mean I'm not an artist. Yeah. Like I paint and therefore I'm an artist. I create and therefore I'm a creative. Or, you know, it doesn't have to be something that you do professionally or get paid for. I'm fortunate enough that at a certain point after having done it for a certain amount of time, I did get to dip my feet into that pool of, quote, being a professional artist and starting to get paid for my work. So that was fun. But it was also terrifying because I realized when it was just me doing it for fun, that's all it was. It was fun. But then all of a sudden, when you're putting it out into the public for people to see or for people to purchase, you're opening doors then for people to give you their opinions on it, which wasn't something that I was used to when it was just for myself and in the comfort of my own home. And so in some ways, I'm really glad that I had done that first, pursued art in that realm because it was very vulnerable. It was very scary. You know, my first art show, I remember I would hide when people would like look at my paintings and the art director was like, you have to be out there. People want to talk to you. And I'm like, I don't want to hear what they have to say because it's so awkward to hear people critique something that you poured, you know, your heart into. And so I think having done that first, that gave me the grit that then when it came to comedy, I was a little bit better equipped to realize maybe what I was getting into with people coming at me with their opinions, because comedy is subjective and people definitely have opinions.
Yes. Okay. Perfect segue, because I literally wrote in my notes, I wanted to ask you about that, because our audience, mostly in their 20s, I'm sure there's a story behind being able to be comfortable enough to stand up there and talk about being a double A, you know, or all the like so many other things. As you said, comedy is subjective. I'm sure it hasn't all been sunshine and roses. Like, I know myself, I feel strongly about this because I had my own journey of overcoming having a podcast, speaking about things on the internet. Like, it's scary to put yourself out there. Yeah, I would love to hear your take and your journey on all of that good stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a journey. And I would definitely say I'm still on it, and I haven't mastered it yet. I don't know if we honestly ever will in our human flesh, right? Because we have hearts and our feelings get hurt. And so even if we gain all the confidence in the world and have all the accomplishments, it can still hurt our feelings when that one person is like, you suck, or whatever, you know, whatever it is they say. And so I think for me, when I started comedy, I was very fortunate that I started it in a class environment. It was an accident, but I thought I was taking an improv class, and it ended up being stand-up comedy. And I was like, oh, it's probably the same thing. So I stuck around. But, you know, I came to find out it wasn't at all. And each person had to take a turn and say why they were taking the class. And so, you know, everyone was there because they wanted to be a comedian. And I was like, oh, I actually just, you know, needed therapy and I couldn't afford it. I was looking for an outlet at the time. I just needed something to get outside of myself and my head and to challenge myself. And so I had shared that on stage. I just needed therapy and I couldn't afford it. And I remember the class laughed and the teacher saying, that's funny. And I was like, oh, I was being serious. And he was like, but that's what makes it funny, because people can relate to feeling like that.
Yeah.
And it was an aha moment where I realized I didn't have to hide my insecurities. I could actually voice them, because people can relate, because we all have insecurities. And actually, sometimes the truer it is, the funnier it is. And so even though comedy is a performance-based industry, you're performing, right? It's the first time I felt like I could just be myself. And I could actually, instead of hide what I was insecure about, just voice it, and it would lose its power. Like, I wouldn't have to be ashamed. So like I've definitely struggled with body image for a lot of my life, and being a smaller girl and being underdeveloped when all of the girls were curvaceous and beautiful. I always felt insecure about that, especially when it came to boys, you know, the names that I were called: surfboard, French fry, Gumby. Like, you don't forget those names. I think people just think, you know, skinny girls are, that's the model or whatever, but it's like, no, we have our own insecurities and we have our own ways that we don't feel woman enough or whatever. And so I remember when I actually started voicing this bit about my body on stage, I didn't do it to be like shock and awe or to make anyone feel awkward. I did it so that it would lose its power over me.
That's so good.
I didn't have to hide it. And the amount of girls or women that would come up to me afterwards and be like, oh my gosh, that's my favorite bit, or I can totally relate, or I've always felt that way. It's just so freeing when you hear someone else speak openly about what they're insecure about, and you realize, I don't have to be insecure about that either.
Yes.
Like, it really does give you power in a sense. And so I think that for me is where the freedom came in with comedy, with just sort of learning how to voice my insecurities and make fun of them. And I can make fun of them because it's me. And it hurts a little bit less when other people still make fun of me for it, because I already know. I'm already in on the joke.
Right.
Sometimes online, people will still make comments about my physical appearance. And sometimes it does sting a little still. But I would say for the most part, it's like, I already made that joke. Like, I don't you can't get me
now
there, buddy.
Stand in the corner and think about what you did.
Had to have that in there, right? I love everything you're saying. And this is just case in point. This is how I like related to you. I'm like, oh my gosh, I get it. Skinny girl too. Like, people think, oh, you don't have any problems. See, we have our own insecurities too, and our own imperfections and whatever. And it just is so relatable. It's so funny. I was thinking a long time ago, I put on, I think it was the most famous thing I've ever said on my Insta story. Like I had the most responses, but I was helping my 12-year-old daughter find a training bra in the Walmart section. And I was like, huh, I think I just found myself one too, because we're about the same size. And I was just like, you know, haha. And you'll appreciate this. I remember saying, eat your heart out, Dolly Parton. But like, yeah. I had so many people respond to that. And that's just a small glimpse. I mean, everyone has their thing, but I love what you said. When you give voice to it, when you talk about it, it like makes it less hairy and grimy or whatever it is. And it just loses its power. And I don't know, there's just a lot. You should write a book on it, right?
Yeah. Funny you should say that.
Kind of funny, actually.
Yeah. There we go.
There we go.
I definitely have some stories in there that, you know, I'm going through the proofreads right now. And even in reading them, I'm like, do I want people to read that? Like, do you know what I mean? Because it's like,
yeah.
It's the same with whether it's sharing it on stage or writing it on the page for people to read. Like, it's just, it, like we said, it's freeing and it's powerful, but it's still so like vulnerable and sometimes scary, especially the right before.
Yeah.
Especially like the right before you say the joke and you don't know if it's going to get the laugh, or the right before you publish the book and you don't know if people are going to respond the way that you would hope that they would. And so I'm very much kind of back in that place of, okay, I know the truth. I know this is empowering to just like let it be out there, but it's so scary to be about to do it, you know, and I still sometimes second guess myself of whether or not I should voice myself, I guess, in certain ways on certain things. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, what else am I going to do? Just hide the rest of my life? So I'll just try. And then your audience finds you.
Yes.
I think that's the beautiful part, is giving up on trying to get people to like me based on what I think other people would like or want to hear, and just being true to myself and letting my audience find me. The people that would relate, or the people that understand, or that have the same sense of humor, or have gone through similar, whether it's a faith journey or a body image journey or a dating journey, you know, whatever it is. I think when you're just true to yourself, you know, it might take a lot longer than those on Instagram with a specific niche, but when you're just true to yourself, no matter what, your people will find you and they're out there. So. Yeah.
1,000%.
If you are not already using and loving Liquid IV, let me just rock your world for a little bit. I know me personally, I would get overheated very easily, and people say, well, you need to drink water or whatever. Like, I get it, but I couldn't drink enough. I would constantly get headaches and find myself depleted until I discovered Liquid IV. I literally use it as my coffee every morning. There is a pineapple flavor that has energy with it as well. There's some that doesn't have caffeine. You can get multiple flavors, but I love the energy kind. I drink it every morning, add a little collagen powder to it. It's like my life changer. I love this stuff so much, and I'm so excited to share with you. They are offering my listeners a discount code of 20% off, which is so kind and so generous. I'm so excited about it. All you have to do is go to liquidiv.com and use promo code TRUTH at checkout. That is 20% off anything. So you can get the pineapple, the energy drink, the regular kind of watermelon is also a personal favorite at our house. My kids love that one. So that's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today by using promo code TRUTH at liquidiv.com.
Okay, JJ, you said so many good things so far. I want to make sure I go back, and you said, like, you know, should I just talk about these things that are insecure and, you know, maybe get some haters, or, you know, the other option is just hide. And I talk about this all the time when I do mentoring calls, or, you know, even when I go speak to sororities. It's so true. And I think that the only thing, when I look back at my journey and doing what I'm doing, my only regret is I didn't start sooner, because I was afraid of what people think, because I was afraid someone else is doing it better, you know, whatever, whatever. And I just love to hear everyone's take on this. Like, I don't know, what would you tell your younger self, and what have you learned along the way of, like, just say it? Like, what's the worst that could happen? You know, like, yeah, I bet you have had a few hecklers. Yeah, I bet you have had a few random people in their mama's basement saying hate comments on your social media. But who's winning? You for saying it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think about that a lot. What would I say to my younger self? Yeah, I mean, it would probably sound like a Nike campaign, like, just do it.
Just do it, yeah.
Just do the thing. And I maybe something to the degree of, you know, people matter. Absolutely, people matter. But their opinions about who you are don't matter at all. Because I, you know, sometimes people just say, oh, you know, who cares what other people think and don't care about other people and you be you and don't apologize. And there's a little bit of like a harshness to it that sort of kind of, you have to like almost have too thick a skin where people just really become the enemy. And in comedy, especially, is really hard. You know, everyone says you have to have thick skin, which is very true, you know. So I want to have thick enough skin so that I'm not letting the voices and opinions of other people affect me in a way that kind of dictate who I am. But I want to maintain a soft heart so that I never lose the, just sight that that people matter. And I never want to become too bitter towards people, that just people in general become problematic in my eyes, or the enemy, so to speak. I think a lot of, especially older comedians who have been in the game for a while, it's just so easy to become bitter and resentful in this industry. And maybe that's true for a lot of, for a lot of industries, but I see them and I'm like, man, I really don't want to lose my sense of not only wonder, but just that, that people matter. You know, and I want to respond with kindness and goodness when and where I can. Sometimes you just don't need to respond at all. But sometimes I have to remind myself, you know, the reason why people are so hurtful is probably because they themselves are hurt.
Yeah.
And they just haven't done the work. And the only way they know to deal is to keep hurting someone else, you know, verbally or whatever that is. And so I really have to remind myself of that when, especially when people come at me online, you know, I have to tell myself that is their stuff.
Yeah.
They are finding what they can about me because there's something that they themselves are insecure about and they can't face it. So instead of facing their own ish, it's just so much easier to attack somebody else. And so that, I think, helps me maintain my sense of humanity without sort of, just, it's like throwing, you know, throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Everybody sucks. Well, that's not true. Yeah. It feels that way sometimes, but the reality is that that's not true. And the reality is also, I would tell my younger self, you know, most people are so worried about their own selves.
1,000%.
They're not as worried about you as you think they are. You actually have way more freedom to express yourself than you think, because other people are also too insecure and too worried about what other people think to be worried about you and how you come across. And so I think that would have been freeing for me at a younger age, because I think I really was so worried about the thoughts and opinions of other people that I think it did hold me back a lot. And I think had I have known, oh wait, everybody's insecure about something, you know, everybody's kind of concerned what other people think, they're not even preoccupied with what I'm doing, I think that just would have been so freeing. And kind of like what you said, I think I would have started a lot younger, just on my life's journeys of the things that I was passionate about or the things that I love to do. I think that fear kind of really crippled me for a while.
Dang fear. Get behind me.
Yeah. It's the worst.
I know. But you said that so perfectly about, I want to not care what people think, but also keep a soft heart. So yeah, you know, you care about your husband and your family and the, and those people certainly do matter and people do have, anyway, you said all of that really perfectly, but I'm curious, and I'm putting you on the spot here, having kind of a unique perspective, seeing people who literally for a living have to quote unquote, not care what people think. I'm sure you've seen people do it well and seen people not do it well. You mentioned, you know, some older comedians just kind of become bitter and stuff. Is there a balance? Have you seen, like, are there tips or tricks? I don't know. I'm just curious. Maybe you've seen people do it well and you seem to be doing it well. Like, what's, you know, how do you balance, get these people don't matter, but this, I don't know, like trying to figure all that out.
Yeah. So one of the things, I don't know if I do it well all the time, but one of the things that I will say I do is when something does hurt my feelings or really bother me, you know, or I feel affected, especially by the words or opinions of other people, I actually give it space. I give it some room to be real, because the reality is it hurt my feelings. And so instead of being like, oh, you know, screw them, or I don't care, who cares what they think, I feel it, and I let myself. And sometimes I'll have to set an alarm. I call it a sadness alarm.
That's a great idea.
Yes, sometimes I have to set an alarm, because you don't want to wallow in it, right? And you don't want to give someone that much power that you're just like, it ruins your day. Yeah. But it's valid that it hurt your feelings. And sometimes if you're just stuffing that time and time again, that is what it makes people end up kind of like having a blow up, because it's all this stuff that they never really felt. And so I set an alarm, and I, you know, maybe it's 20 minutes, maybe it's however long, and I just let myself be sad, or I be mopey, or I, you know, I talk to my husband about it. I'm like, this is how it feels, and I don't like it, and I will cry about it, and I'll, you know, however pathetic I want to feel about it, I let myself feel that way. And then when the alarm goes off, it's like, okay, time to get up, time to move on, time to keep going. And I think for me, that's kind of what helps me just maintain, I don't know, that soft heart, so to speak, because I'm letting it feel. I'm letting myself feel how it really feels when someone does treat me like that. It sucks. Like, the reality is it sucks, and it doesn't feel good. And again, that's not every single time, so to speak. But sometimes if something's especially hard, or I'm just going through a tough season, I just need those times where I give it space to be hard, and I give it space to be real and to hurt my feelings. And once I've felt it, honestly, by the time that alarm goes off, usually it's kind of like, oh yeah, who cares what they think? And it's really genuine. It's really kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to lay here all day because of them, you know? But I think it's because I allowed myself that space to feel it. It feels like a more genuine sense of, you know, I don't care what they think, as opposed to just convincing myself I don't care what they think, when kind of really I do.
That is gold advice. I remember hearing someone say that their counselor said, they had been walked through a lot of trauma, and they said one of the best advices they got in counseling was to set time. I don't remember if it was every day or once a week, whatever, of worry time, of time to like, just, you know, all the anxiety, all the whatever, like, this is your time, set an alarm, fear it, feel it, cry about it, whatever. And then, you know, move on. Because if you don't, it'll either be lingering behind you the whole time, or stuff down and become this huge thing. 100%. I feel like that's the best advice ever, JJ. Yeah.
I love it. It's my favorite sound, the applause.
Yeah. I live for the applause. Anyway, I got all these little sound effects, and they're so fun to play with. Anyway. Okay. I love it. So I have another quick question. Dolly Parton. Why? How? Tell me your obsession. Tell me all about it. By the way, we both live here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Dolly is a Sevierville native, but she has some ties to Chattanooga area. Anyway, so we're basically sisters, basically.
Yeah.
So tell me all the things.
Yeah, she is the best. I mean, I've always loved Dolly. I've always loved her music. I think I've shared before with friends and family that, you know, people who knew me, they're like, well, you weren't always like obsessed with her like you are now. And I'm like, that's true. I think what happened was in 2020, when the world shut down and we had all this free time, I read her memoir just for fun, because I always liked her. But, you know, when it came down to it, I don't even know where this suggestion came from. Just one, her memoir was a suggestion that came up that I should read. And it was so good. I mean, I read through that thing so fast, and it's thick. It's a hearty one. She was younger when she wrote it. So she could do another one. I think she should do another one. But I became really fascinated by her as a person, not just as a musician. I became fascinated by her because she was a female in a male dominated industry at a time when I think it was even harder to be a female in a male dominated industry. She never has compromised her sense of self or who she is for the sake of other people liking her. Now, she has her own look and her own personality, but she's very aware of it. And she's the first to say that she's in on the joke of what she looks like. And she says, you know, I give something people to look at, but then once they're looking and I have their attention, I say something worth saying. I do not waste people's attention. She has maintained not only her sense of self, but her faith in an industry that it's really hard to do that. And she's not apologized for it. She doesn't push it on anyone. She doesn't really like blast it from the rooftops, but she doesn't hide it either. And she doesn't shy away from it if it ever comes up. And she's very open to talk about it. It's just, it's very natural and it's very organic, which I think is such a beautiful thing and really hard to do in the limelight because it can either feel like pushy and grimy or people just like completely don't want anyone else to know and it feels shameful. Kind of a hidden thing. And I feel like she just has this beautiful balance of like, this is absolutely 100% a part of my life, my faith. I don't expect other people to share that same faith in order to love them and to hang out with them, which I think is a beautiful thing. And on top of that, she's been married to the same man for over 50 years, which is another really hard thing to do in the entertainment industry. So for me, she became just such a representation that it's possible. It's possible to be a female in a male-dominated industry and be successful. It's possible to be a savvy businesswoman and to be quirky and creative and fun and artsy. It's possible to maintain my sense of self and not compromise who I am while still being, you know, popular in the entertainment field, as well as it's possible to maintain my faith and not have to compromise it, as well as it's possible to have a really beautiful, healthy marriage and still be in the limelight or still be whatever it is. And I think for me, I need a trailblazer. I need evidence that it's possible. I'm right. Not the trailblazer. I'm not the person that's like, it's never been done. I'll do it. I'm not proud of it, but I think I'm definitely more of a follower. I need to see that it's been done before. And then I'm like, okay, I'll try.
Yeah.
And for me, Dolly is my version of like, it's possible. It's, I know I can keep going in this field because I have seen Dolly break all the boxes and all the barriers that women once felt confined to. And so because it's possible, even though we're very different in, you know, the things that we're pursuing, and I'm not trying to reach Dolly status by any means. She's in her own field and I'm so happy with that.
Okay. Sorry. When you said we're very different, I was ready for you to say in bra size.
Yeah, it was coming. She's much bigger than I will ever be, literally in many ways.
Couldn't help myself.
Yeah. But I think just, to have that, to have a model to look to, for me, I think has just been really huge and encouraging. And it's just someone that when the world seems a little bit dark or humanity just seems a little bit bleak or the entertainment industry just seems horrible or raunchy or whatever it is, I look at Dolly and I'm like, I can keep showing up. Mm-hmm. I can keep showing. If Dolly's still showing up at 77, I can keep showing
up. Right?
It's crazy.
I'm so glad I asked that question. That was better than agreed. And I say this quote on here all the time, but you can't be what you can't see. And so Dolly is just an example of being, as you said, different industries, whatever. But like, I've been here before you. I've paved a little bit of trail. I've made this easier. Mm-hmm. Come on up, sister. And yeah, that'll get me all in my feels because that's amazing. And she has done it very well. And I love everything you said. And I also wrote down to read her memoir because that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. My Life and Other Unfinished Business it's Dolly. And then it's My Life and Other Unfinished Business is the title. Nice.
And shout out to Dollywood. We're not getting paid by this by any means, but we live here not too far from it. I'm sure you've been several times too. Like they have a little, there's a place where you sing hymns, right?
Oh, they have a chapel. They have a full on chapel that is dedicated to the pastor, her pastor, you know, when she was little, and it's kind of replicated after her hometown chapel. It's so cute. It's old and wooden and has all the little character. It Yeah, it's quiet in there, and they have music playing, and they have actual Sunday services there on Sundays. And it's, if you think about it, it's like it's in the middle of a theme park. Like, right. Who does that? And it's not flashy. It's not showy. It's not you should go to the chapel. It's not. It's just important. It's a important piece of Dolly's life, which Dollywood is very much. You go all over the park, and the whole theme is you're going to find out parts about her life, right? And so just one of the parts of her life is her faith. And so they have this little chapel there that if you care to – you can go in and they have Sunday services if you want to join. And I think, man, that's so rare that someone would take a theme park. I'm talking roller coasters, food, games, you know, shops, all the things. And in the middle of that, also just have this representation of a piece of her life that's important, that give people the option if they want to go check it out. I just think it's so unique. It's so special. I think everything she does is just so thoughtful and intentional and is so true to who she is, which again encourages me to keep being myself, no matter how scary it feels sometimes, because people's opinions can be cruel.
Yeah, right. I read Jessica Simpson's memoir, and she talked about Dolly kind of helped her through. I don't remember all the details, but kind of helped her through a tough time too, and just the real, genuine person that she is. Anyway, not to do a whole podcast on Dolly, but I'm glad that I asked. Yeah. Queen Dolly. But yeah, I think that's so important that she's paved the way for kind of what you're doing in a different industry, but that really says a lot to that. So that's pretty cool. Okay. And you talked about this a little bit too, but I'm curious, and you don't have to give us the deep dive, but a little bit about your faith journey, because I know that's important to you too. And in a not necessarily faith dominated job, I guess you could say, I'm sure that's come up, but yeah, I just love to hear a little bit about your story with that.
Yeah. So my dad was a preacher, growing up. So I'm a PK formerly. He's retired now. So I don't have that stressor anymore. No, but I grew up in the church. I grew up very much, I guess, just your average church life, you know, church on Sundays, church on Wednesday, youth group on Wednesdays, whatever it was. And I think as the preacher's kid, there's always the expectation that, you know, you should probably be well behaved because your daddy's the pastor, you know, and if you can't lead his kids, how's he going to lead a congregation? So I think there was a lot of expectation around that, you know, whether it was from other people or somehow I picked up on it and I carried it myself. I don't know, but I definitely felt it. It's a Southern Baptist church, so it was definitely more like traditional conservative back in the day. It kind of morphed into more community, non-denominational, I think, as I got older. But yeah, I grew up with an understanding that, you know, yeah, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whosoever believe in him should not perish and have everlasting life. Like, I can recite all the things, but I honestly don't know if I could say I truly understood them or knew what they meant. And so I had a basic understanding that God loved us, but he loved everybody. You know, who am I to him? It wasn't until I was in college and I had met this guy. I was in a sorority. We were in the same sorority.
We haven't talked about that yet. We were both
different schools, same sorority. Yeah. I love it. I had gone to a party one night with a group of girls, and this guy was there who I thought he was pretty cute. I was like, I'm vibing on this guy. It's really cute. But I noticed he wasn't drinking, and like everybody was drinking. And we just struck up a conversation, and I don't know how it came up, but church came up, and he ended up like inviting me. And I was like, weird. This is college. Like, and I think growing up in a Southern Baptist church, you know, it's very like, you know, you're not jamming all out to the worship songs, and it's not very expressive. And certainly, like, there's not young people that are stoked on their faith. Like, if anything, my understanding was, yeah, totally, I'm a Christian, and I'll take all that stuff more seriously when I'm older and when I have kids. But for now, I'm going to have my fun, I think, was maybe my understanding. And so this guy ends up inviting me to a college church service, which I just thought was bizarre. I had never even heard of a college church service. And so I went, and I remember walking in, and there were like kids my age, just like all out, like hands raised, singing and praying. And I was like, what is going on? My mom was a hand raiser, but like she was like the nut in the church for like literally having one hand up during worship.
Wild woman.
Yes. And I just remember this guy, and you know, he ended up talking to me a little bit and saying that he was a Christian. And I remember thinking like, this is weird. Cause like I'm a Christian and he's a Christian, but like, it looks so different. And he seems like genuinely like excited about it. Like he's not like, for me, it was more of like a, I'm a Christian. Like, yeah. Like a, I didn't want too many people, especially in college, to know. And we ended up building a friendship, and I mean, I was definitely, it was more than, for me, it was more than a friendship. I was crushing on him hard. And so
yeah.
I think if I'm honest, it was maybe more of like a missionary dating situation where he was like, yeah, you're cute, but you're not a Christian, so I'm not going to date you. And I was like, what do I got to do, Lord?
Sign me up.
Yeah. And so, you know, right or wrong, I don't know. Everyone's experience is different, but that for sure was a table turner, so to speak, for me. It was a game changer in me starting to pursue for myself, what does that actually mean? To believe in God or to be a Christian or this whole Jesus thing, like, and who actually like, is he, mm-hmm. you know, outside of just this Bible character that I read about who turned water into wine, which sounded awesome in college. So it was definitely, it changed things for me where I started to begin to understand that all of it was personal. The whole point of Christianity was never about, it wasn't even about, you know, trying to convince other people to be Christians, which I think I thought it was about. And that always felt so uncomfortable to me. It was just about believing that like God really loved you and that what Jesus did was actually very personal to you as an individual. And it didn't matter what I acted like or didn't matter who I had been before, but like I was still accepted and I was still loved. And it was just kind of like an aha moment. And so I think that turned the tables for me where it became more of a personal relationship situation. But, you know, I'm still in college. There's still the whole dating thing. I still am kind of head over heels in love with this guy. And then I read that book. Do you remember that book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye?
Oh, yeah.
Like the deep dive here.
Yeah.
I read that book and I was like, oh, no. I'm not supposed to date if I want to be a Christian. Again, you're young and you're learning how it all works. And, you know, I think when you kind of have that first encounter, that experience, at least for me, when I had that first experience of really understanding faith and who Jesus was, I was like, I'm all in. I want to learn it all. I want to understand it all. And I don't know how this book got recommended to me, but it did. And I read this book and I was like, oh, I guess I can't date. And we're supposed to quote court, and he's supposed to want to court me and marry me and all these things. And I ended up saying to him, you know, that we couldn't date, you know, cause I wanted to, I don't know, be court. I don't know how I worded it, courted for marriage, whatever it was, thinking he was going to come, you know, knock down my doors and be like, okay, then marry me, which, you know, he's in college too. And, you know, when he didn't, I remember being just devastated and really confused and really kind of being like, why not? Like, why? And I remember kind of having this moment with the Lord where he was like, even if he isn't in the picture, are you still in?
Mm,
and I was like,
a good question.
Ooh,
yeah,
that changes things because he was kind of the draw,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I was being honest with myself, like he was. And so even though that book really did a number on my psyche, which the author did later, years later, come out and apologize yes. for writing it, which is probably a smart move on his
You're
part.
Like, that would have been helpful 20 years ago. Thanks.
Yeah. My gosh. It was not helpful at all at the time, nor did I think it was actually sound advice. But that said, I think for me, it really started the course of my faith becoming more personal and more real to me. And so even still to this day, it looks very different. And I've gone in waves of feeling like I'm super close to God and we're super connected. And I feel like man, we're best buds. And then I have seasons, or I have had seasons for sure, where I'm like, I think I'm done with this and I'm tired and I don't know if this was all that I signed up for. And I don't understand why you allow this or why that. And I think the beautiful thing is, no matter what season I'm in, even when I'm in one of those really ugly seasons where I'm just like, where I've said to God before, like, I think I'm done with you. Like, I'm too tired. I still feel loved. I still feel like it's okay. I feel like even if and when I have said to God, I think I'm done with you, his response is, it's okay. And that in and of itself makes me want to be like, well, damn it, now I can't leave. You know?
Yeah.
Because it's so, he really does just give us so much freedom.
Unconditional love.
To be ourselves. Yeah. And really does give us freedom to choose him or not. And it doesn't change how he feels about us. And so I think for me, my faith journey is also still very much a journey, and I'm very much still on it. And I think it's still evolving. If I'm honest, I'm solid in what I believe and who I am and what I believe, but man, it's looked so different from my teens to my 20s to my 30s and now hitting 40. Like, it's just looked so different over different decades. But the one constant has just been that, like, for as cliche as it sounds, like, God's been the same. And it's like, wow.
How about that?
All right. I guess I'll stay here. I guess we'll still be friends.
We don't see
not
that
giving up on me.
We don't see that model of unconditional love anywhere. And then, like, when you experience, yeah, it's just like, oh, wow, this is legit, you know?
Anywhere. Yeah. And I've looked, you know, in the seasons where I've really given up, or, you know, cause I've gone through some things where I've thought, God is not, nope, I cannot believe in a God who, this is what happens in this world. Like, I've gone through those seasons where that's kind of it. And I've looked into other, like, faiths and religions and what they're all about. But man, at the end of the day, like, for me, like, the God that I've come to understand and know is the only one who, it's not about reaching some point or doing some act to get closer to him or to reach enlightenment or to what, like, he's the constant. I'm the one that's always changing, that's flip-flopping, that's kind of a mess and chaotic. And there's not, like, these hoops and rings of fire that I have to go through to get to him. I needed that. I needed something bigger than myself. Because if you're talking about just, like, believing in nothing, that takes more faith than believing in something.
Yeah, like, I know, right? For real. To believe that we're here by accident and one degree this way would all burn up, one degree this way would all freeze to death. Like, you can't, it takes a lot more faith to believe that was an accident.
Yeah. And honestly, when life gets hard, I realize, you know, it's not that God, like, makes it all better. It's not that he fixes it or he, you know, makes it go away, but I don't have to be alone in it. And I don't feel alone in it. And for me, that was huge. Like, for me, to know that, you know, I'm not struggling by myself, even if it feels that way sometimes. It can feel like all is lost. And yet at the same time, like, the reality is it's not. Like, just to have the freedom to cry out, help God, I don't know. Like, it's so comforting. So it's, for me, it's very reassuring. And so I'm sold out on, I need God in order to function at all. I mean, I'm a mess with him, so I can't imagine without him.
Relatable.
So that's probably too much of a deep dive, but
that's okay. This is why I like you. I love it. So obviously I want to encourage people to get your book, to do a deeper dive and hear all those stories. But listen, guys, if nothing else, you got to follow her on Instagram. You have the funniest stories. And your dog and all the things and your travels. It's so entertaining. Isn't it just at JJ Barrows?
Yes.
Okay.
At
we'll make
JJ
sure.
Barrows.
I have little show notes in the bottom of the episode. So obviously you'll be linked there, but yeah, that's where you can find the good stuff. the link to the book when it's available for the wild, wild internet, and all that good stuff. So yeah, thank you so much for being here. I'm just so excited to connect with you, to hang out again in real life. And I just love your story. I'm so excited to share it.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for having me and let me share some of it.
I loved it. All righty.
If you enjoyed this episode, I would enjoy you sharing it with a friend. If you take a screenshot and share it on your social, make sure you give me a tag at Katie Bulmer Life, and I will definitely make sure I respond. And thank you so much for sharing the love. Hey, and if you're new to the podcast, make sure you scroll back. We have over 100 episodes interviewing experts and 20-somethings and everyone in between, tackling all the hottest topics you wish you knew, but maybe just don't. This is called the Truth for Your 20s podcast, and I'm so thankful that you are here.